Okay, everyone, Boker Tov. Today's daf brought to you from Eretz HaKedesh in Masechet Yevamot is Daf Kuf Yud Tes. Now, this is definitely not meant to be quit. This is actually cute, meaning that we just enjoy the daf and find everything in it to be absolutely marvelous. So, we've been talking about all of the issues of Ne'emanut. But what about the questions of the way that a chazaka or a rov is going to impact on the elements of the different types of ne'emanut? Remember, we have the ne'emanut for herself, and then we have a lack of ne'emanut in all cases where we have a chashash of some type of complex relationship, which excluded the five or the seven women. And the interactions here between the dinim of ne'emanut as defined by the special gezeiros derabbanan, by the problems of the interrelationships, by the questions of what the chazaka was or what the rov was, and by the possible chashashot about what has happened in the interim that may affect the status of a woman whose husband died and is now in a matzav of possibly needing yibum and being asur l'shuk. All of these things come together at last in this perek, and we're going to find some very, very fascinating interactions of an idea that we started with already in the previous perek about how something can be half believable vis-a-vis one individual and the same issue not believable vis-a-vis another individual, and the machlokas Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva about how those things play out in the level of the Isser of Achilas Truma versus the Isser of Heter Erva, also the interrelationship of this Ne'emanut for associated financial issues where we don't have a particular takana that allows us to be ma'amin. So we've already entered into the thicket of the interrelationships, of the concepts of Ne'emanut in fascinating ways in which something is partially acted upon as if it's Neman and partially not. We're going to go into some fascinating cases over here in which the Nemanut of two individuals or interrelated over here as Tzorot create a lot of Tzoros. So let's see our Halakha Mishnah as we begin the Halakha Perek. And since we do not have Richie to complete his statement of yesterday, we do have the absolute, not the Halakha Talisker, but the Halakha Litvisher. So let's get a Litvisher take on this perek. Doc, give it to us.
Learn from the Halakha perek.
Ha'isha shehalach ba'ala vitzarata lemedinat hayam. So here we got an interesting situation, right? So we've got the woman who her husband goes with the other wife that he's married, and she finds out, Vova Amrula Meit Ba'alech. So we're talking about that, whatever it is. In other words, it's exactly the same language we use in Aisha Rabbah. Vova Amrula Meit Ba'alech. Okay, so whatever the situation was, we have a right to be Semech on that, even if it's an Eid Echad. However, here's the deal. It's no good. Why? Because she cannot get married to the shuk yet. And she cannot get yibum yet. Because she first has to know what the dispensation is of her tzara. Achitida shema mu'uberet hi tzarata. She has to find out whether the other woman who went along with her husband, she always calls her co-wife, the other woman. You imagine, man, well, what a complicated, the other woman. Anyway, so the other woman might have gotten pregnant. I hate to think of it. And if she is pregnant, so then I am ready to marry anybody else, right? But if she's not pregnant, then I have to marry the yavam. But if she is pregnant, I'm not allowed to marry the yavam. So what do I do? So she can't get married until she finds out. Now, the Gemara is going to ask, I mean, why is that forever? What do you mean she can't get married? Couldn't she get chalitza? We'll get back into that issue to remember the old circus when we get into the Gemara. Now, what about the case is where not our chashash is that maybe a child was born because her husband went with the other woman. Maybe in this case, we don't have that problem, but we do have a problem of the mother-in-law. So in this case, her mother-in-law lived overseas, and her husband basically goes overseas. And now we find out that even though she never had a yavam, because her husband never had a brother. So therefore, when she finds out, Amrullah, that your husband died, you would think that she could go ahead and get married. But if she has a mother-in-law who is still of childbearing age and who's married, so then we have the same problem of the mother-in-law as we did of the other woman. And therefore, the mother-in-law might have had a son. And now, even though before there was no yavam for her to marry, how does she know that her mother-in-law didn't have a child? For some reason, she does not have to worry about that. Einacho shesh. So she does have to worry about her sora, the other woman, but she does not have to worry about her mother-in-law. On the other hand, if the mother-in-law was pregnant when they went out, and she has no idea whether, in fact, the mother-in-law had a child that was her yavam, then she's got a problem. Then she has to be chosheshet. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no, actually, eina chosheshet, she doesn't even have to worry about that case. Now, let's see the obvious difference between the case of the other woman and the case of the mother-in-law. The case of the mother-in-law is only a problem for her in the event that the mother-in-law had a son. Because, obviously, the only yavam can be a son. Okay, so let's analyze what might have happened. The mother-in-law is pregnant. She went out milaya, so we see that she's pregnant. Now, what are the chances that she produced a son? Well, first of all, we have a 5% chance of a stillborn. Then we have, out of the remaining 95%, we have half and half, approximately, of the remaining 95% who are males. But that puts the possibility of a male beneath the 50% mark, right? So therefore, you don't have to worry. Masha Enkin, the other woman, if she had a child, so then it wouldn't matter what the sex of the child is, because remember, when it comes to Yibum, we say Ben Ein Ayin, anything at all would be sufficient to pater her from Yibum. So for the Tzara, she does have to worry. For the mother-in-law, she doesn't have to worry. And we're going to need to understand what the Shita is over here of those who argue on Rabbi Yeshua and say you still have to worry as long as she was pregnant, the mother-in-law, when she left. So let's take a look at, first of all, the language of the Mishnah. The language of the Mishnah is very strange. It says over here that the question of the tzarata is, oh, he tzarata. Ad sheteida, she has to find out whether he tzarata maybe is pregnant. Shema me'uberet, he tzarata. What? That's a very odd kind of way of saying things. We're talking about poetry over here. You want to know whether the tzara is pregnant. So how did she become he tzarata? There's got to be some meaning to specifically he tzarata. Yes, of course there is. Because let's say that her husband goes out without that other woman, right? I mean, how do we know that he didn't pick up a girl when he was overseas and get her pregnant? Why only worry about the existing tzara, the other woman? Once this wife has her mind about the other women, there's a lot of other women out there. And yet, the Mishnah is saying, we only are worried about an actual woman that we know about. L'hot tzara hu d'chashina. Aval tzara achrite lo chashina. We are not worried about that. Maybe he went ahead and found someone else. This is the only thing you need to worry about where it is known. So lo magzikina nisura. We're not going to come up with a new reason about an event that we know nothing about. Now, you say she can't do either. She can't get married. She can't get Yibam. I understand why she can't get Yibam, because, I mean, if Lamaisa, the other woman, did have a child, or even if she's pregnant, that would be enough to prevent her from getting Yibam. Because in the event, remember, that that pregnancy turns out to be viable, so then it turned out that she was never chayevet in Yibam. And if she's not chayevet in Yibam, then she's mityabem, and she's going to be over on an Isser Karis. So obviously she can't get Yibam. I understand that. Because then kapoga be'eshet ish di'oraita. I mean, eshet ach di'oraita. That's a disaster. But why can't she get married? I don't understand. She should be able to go ahead and get married. Why? Because what's your problem? Your problem is only that maybe she is chayevet in Yibam, right? Okay, so now look. Why don't we simply say that if we take a look at the rov, so rov nashim are actually going to ultimately get pregnant and have children. So if her husband is traveling overseas with the other woman, so can't we just safely take for granted that, look, in all of that time, the other woman got pregnant and had a child, and that would be the norm, and that is considered to be a rov, and so she should be able to be semich on the rov, not worry about Yibam, and go ahead and get married to the shuk, whoever she wants. Shall we conclude that the Mishnah only is true aliba to Rebbe Meir? Because remember, Rebbe Meir is the one who is cheshed for a miut. We've had this sheet of Rebbe Meir several times, and it was very prominent over here in the Masechet, because remember, it was Rebbe Meir who was the one that said that a katan and a kitana cannot be involved in Yibam, because we're worried that maybe the katan will turn out to be sterile, and maybe the kitana will turn out to be an islandite, and what do you mean? I mean, what are the chances of that? There's such a small number of people that are congenitally sterile, and nonetheless, Rebbe Meir is chayshish. So, in that point of view, if you're chayshish, so then, okay, it's true that most women, given a long enough time over here, should get pregnant and deliver. And according to the Rabbanan, we ought to be able to be simich on that lahalacha, that she should be able to go ahead and get married. But not according to Rebbe Meir, because since there is a miut, that's significant enough, even though it's not a rov, and you got to worry about it. And therefore, you can't rely on going ahead and getting married. So maybe that's what the Mishnah is saying. But Ein Hachinami, according to the Rabbanan who argue with Rebbe Meir, they rely on a rov, and therefore there should be no problem. And the Mishnah is therefore Shelo Kalocha, because we don't paskin that Chashirin L'Ruba the way Rebbe Meir says. No, says the Gemara, we do not have to say that, because of a very important reason. Because Afilo Tema Rabbanan, there are two different types of rov. This is a concept that we've had, again, many times before in other Masechtot. If we could even get a little bit of light, that would be Shafuch al Pnei HaRebbe, instead of his being in the dark to us, of course. I mean, to himself, he's never in the dark. But to those who wish to be Nene from the light of his face, it's a pasuk, Or Panecha. How are we supposed to relate to Or Panecha if you have the light behind you? So, there are two very different types of rov. Ah, the Gershi got the message too. Very nice. So, there's two very different types of rov. One type of rov is a predictive rov, right? It's a statistical prediction. You want to talk about the question of most women in the world, which has nothing to do with her. We're simply saying that statistically, if you talk about a prediction, the prediction will be that we will have a child here from this woman. That's a prediction. We're not looking at something that is. We're looking at something that we're thinking ought to happen based on statistics. And based on those statistics, we're going to determine what it is that happened. Well, that is a completely different issue than saying a rov, where we're talking about the question of a set actuality of things, items. not events and possible courses of history, but we're talking about actual items that are present. Like, let's say in the famous case where you've got the 9 stores that are selling kosher meat or selling non-kosher meat, the ones, whatever those cases are. So, okay, we're over there. We're talking about a rov. That's called the rov is in front of us. We're dealing with a finite number of elements, and we look at the interrelationship of those elements. So that's a place where the Rabbanan agree that there's rov. As a matter of fact, remember that the din of rov is based really on the concept of Sanhedrin. The Torah says, acharei rabim la'atot. Now, when you're talking about Sanhedrin, I can count the people. Okay, here there's 12 people that are saying this is the halacha, 11 people that are saying that's the halacha, and that means I have a right to say all I see is the majority. A majority is not the same as a statistical prediction, obviously. So if that's the case, where do we ever see that the Rabbanan would say, well, you know, most women in the world get pregnant? What does that have to do with this case? It never has anything to do with this particular case. This is the mistake, by the way, that people make when gambling. They believe that the next throw of a die has something to do with the previous throws of the die, right? That has nothing to do with it. Because, oh, well, I got the 5, 6 times in a row. But there's no chance it's going to be 7 times in a row. Take a look at the statistics. There's exactly the same statistics this time as there was the previous time. So therefore, we're not dealing with the same issue at all. So even the Rabbanan, of course, would agree in this case. We'd say a prediction, this woman must have gotten pregnant. That's nothing. So ki azei Rabbanan bata ruba, that's only if it's a ruba de ite kaman, it's in front of us. We have a concrete issue that we're determining in concrete objects or concrete people or ideas. So kagon teshe chanuyot v'sanhedrin. Have a ruba de lete kaman. You can't say this woman is going to have a child because most women in such a situation would have a child. Lo azei Rabbanan bata ruba, the Rabbanan do not follow the rov. Man, what are you talking about? The fundamental case that we've been talking about all along was a predictive rov. We were talking about most little children will not turn out to be sterile. What does that have to do with the child in front of us? Nothing. Most little girls will not turn out to be islanded. So what? And that's exactly where the machlokas was. Hare katanu ktana, which is a ruba de leta kaman, and the Rabbanan say, well, you don't have to worry about it because most children don't turn out to be sterile. So I don't understand. You see that there's no difference because even when we're talking about a predictive rov, we sort of extrapolate, see the entirety of the species in front of us, see this child as part of the species, and now we say, okay, what are the chances that he is a child that is sterile? The Rabbanan are still using the same idea of rov that they derive from Sanhedrin, because we have the machlokas, the Tanya, katanu ktana lo chotzim v'lo miyabmim divrei Rebbe Meir, and the Chachamim say to Rebbe Meir, look, I understand why they can't do chalitza, because after all, it says ha'ish in the parsha, right? So it says, im lo yachpots ha'ish, we're saying the ish. The point is that he has to be an adult. He has to be an ish. And since the remaining of the pasuk says that the alta yivimto and so on, so that means that we're comparing isha le'ish. And because of that, we agree with you. Of course you can't do chalitza. A child cannot do chalitza. But why in the world are you saying that just because they're ktanim, they can't do yibum? What would be wrong with their doing yibum? Matam ein miyabmim. So Rabbi Meir said to them, Katan shemi matze saris kitana shemati matze ailonit. And then it turns out that they were acting in an iser chorus. And they were pogea be'erava, so we can't do that. And the Rabbanan Savre, zil but a rov kitanim, v'rov kitanim lav sarisin. You know, now over there, we do not have a concrete population that we're talking about. We're just making a statistical prediction, right? And Zil Basar Rov Ktanot. Rov Ktanot Lav Eilanit Ninu. Ultimately, they don't turn out to be Eilanits. So what do we have to worry about? Predictive. So you see that the Rabbanan definitely do rely on the fact that most children are going to reach puberty. So why are you trying to give me this stuff that the Rabbanan don't believe in a Rov de Lesekaman? It's obviously not true. So I guess we got to go back and bite the bullet. The Mishnah is only going al libra Rabbi Meir, and I guess it's not lahalacha. So actually, we would not have to worry, and she would be allowed to get married. I guess. No, says Gemara, something's wrong. Because the Mishnah, it sounds like it's Rabbi Meir, but when you continue reading, you run into trouble, al libra to Rabbi Meir. Take a look. Come with me, and let's look at the Sefer. B'mayukim, the Rabbi Meir. So now, look at the rest of the Mishnah. Ema Sefer. This is the part about the mother-in-law. So here the mother-in-law was overseas, and her husband went to visit his dear mother, and then he dies. She has no idea whether mother-in-law had another child while her husband was there, and that child might have been a male, and therefore she now cannot go ahead and get married to anyone she wishes, because maybe there's a brother who is a Yavam and who didn't exist before. So if you're going to tell me, this is Eina Chosheshet. Now, why? See, look, I understood Eina Chosheshet because of the issue of Rov. But if you're going Aliba to Rabbi Meir, why Eina Chosheshet? I don't understand. You're saying because even if the mother-in-law got pregnant and had a child, the chances of that child being a male are less than 50%, right? Because once we take into consideration failed pregnancies with the percentage of surviving children, and we analyze the sex of those children, it's less than 50% of the total number of pregnancies that will end with a viable male child equals viable Yavam. So therefore, I understood that that was the difference between the Chamot and the Tzara. But if you hold a Rabbi Meir, we don't have a right to go according to the Rov, because Rabbi Meir says, you got to worry about the miyut. The miyut is certainly significant over here, isn't it? So now, in order to understand what the Gemara is about to do, you need to be familiar with another term. This is a Moshe Foreman card term. Please write. If not, somebody is going to suffer. I stopped keeping the list, and it is you who are keeping the list, and I assume behind that big K, kosher? Behind that big K, square K, kosher? Who's actually a square K anyway? I'm getting very suspicious about this whole thing. Maybe there's an Avichai link lurking behind there, huh? And there is no Moshe. Note, nobody's coming forward to claim the crown of Moshe. Very suspicious. Anyway, it is time to add another. Now I see why you didn't want to come forward. Put back the K. Anyway, so what we, the term that we need to note is the miuta de miuta. Rabbi Meir agrees that where the set of the chashash itself is a miut, and then within that chashash, you have only a miut, that is a miuta de miuta, and Rabbi Meir agrees that that we're not chayish for. So let's imagine that the case would be like this. We would say, most women don't get pregnant. And now, those few, when we say few, those 49% of women who do get pregnant, what percentage of them have viable Yavams? 49%. That would be a miut of a miut. And over there, Rabbi Meir would be Meida, that doesn't count, and we don't need to worry about that. But in this case, that's why the Gemara goes through the rigmarole that we're about to go through, is that it's not true. Most women will get pregnant. So therefore, we're not talking about a miut. Therefore, we could talk about the initial set of the Sveikas as if that's a given. All right, so now we have a woman. What's the chances that she will have a Yavam? 49%. But Rabbi Meir is chayish for that, you see. But if we wouldn't be able to establish that, then we wouldn't have a problem. Okay, but here's our problem. You say that the Mishnah is going a little bit of Rabbi Meir, and it says in the Sefer of the Mishnah that if Haitala Chamot Eina Chosheshet, but if you're going a little bit of Rabbi Meir, Amai Eina Chosheshet. First of all, let me explain to you. We have a set of women who have children, because Halechacha Rov Nashim are Mitabrot V'Yoldot. So now let's get that out of the way. Now we're talking about, okay, what are the percentages of those women, and that's our given set, and that's not a miut, of those women who will have a yavam, less than 50%, because we have Rov Nashim will have children that are viable, but miut mapilot. And out of those who do have children, you'll only have half male and half female. So now if you take the miut of the mapilot, you add them to the mechtsa nekevot, you now have a minority of yavams, because you only have a minority of these pregnancies that end up creating yavams. And therefore the zecharim is a miuta, not a miuta de miuta. And leichush, therefore Rabbi Meir should be cheshish. And according to Rabbi Meir, and you said the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, and yet the Mishnah is saying, don't worry, maybe the mother-in-law had a baby yavam. Why not? I'll tell you why not. Maybe. There's another issue over here, which is the chazakah. I mean, you've been talking only about Rove as if we only have to operate with the questions of Rove, Aid, and the Nebanut of the Isha because of our Gezerah, right? But you're forgetting that there's another issue that also has to do with how to Paskin a Halacha where we are not sure about what the state of things are. That's called Chazakah. Now, let's take that into consideration here, and suddenly the equation changes. Because maybe the point is like this. She was in a state of being muteret l'shuk. Not true? Because at the time that the husband left to go to Medinat Hayam, the mother-in-law was known not to have produced any brothers. Now you're saying maybe in the interim when the husband died, in the space of the year that they were overseas, maybe in fact his mother-in-law had a child. But initially, the chazaka was that this woman is not a woman who is related to any yavam, because there is no yavam. And therefore, her state is defined by a marriage that is preventing her from marrying anyone else, which by definition means upon termination of the marriage with the death of her husband, she can marry whoever she wants, like any normal marriage, right? And therefore, since she had a chazaka, therefore, Rabbi Meir is not worried in this case. He relies on the chazaka, even against the miyuta. But in the reisha of the Mishnah, the chazaka functions in the opposite way. Because in the reisha, there was a brother, and there was no child. And now, the tzora goes overseas with her husband, and in this case, the standing presumption of the chazaka would be, this woman is in a relationship that is mechayev her yibum. And you want to change that. So therefore, tiyabem, she needs yibum based on the chazaka, and you can't use a rove to cancel it because the idea would be that we're chayesh lemiyuta. So therefore, why would the Mishnah say that she has to find out if that's the case? Then why would the Mishnah say that she has to find out that there was no child if in the reisha we also would have a chazaka? Then she should actually get yibum. I understand why you're saying she can't marry, but why doesn't she get yibum? You said, well, we can't let her get yibum. That would be disaster. What if Lamaisa, she is actually petura from yibum, and then you're going to be pegeya in an Isser Eshet Ach, make up your mind. If you're following the Chazaka, and you're going to say we have to be Chayish, so then follow the Chazaka over here and let her get Yibum. Omer Reb Nachman, Omer Reb Avur, you can't compare the two cases. The Reisha, if we allow her to get Yibum, what's going to happen? She's going to be Pugia in an Isser Chorus. That's very serious. So therefore, we aser it. Chashashu, over there, the Chachamim are worried. But in this case, in the Seifa, what's the worst that's going to happen? If we say that we allow her to get married, it's only an Isser Lav. So the question about, is there a new child to her mother-in-law? Does a Yavam exist or not? Don't worry about it. Why don't worry about it? Because even if it turns out there was such a child born, the worst that's going to happen is she'll be over a Lav and she won't be over on an Isser Karet. Therefore, they're not comparable. Says Rava, what are you talking about? Who ever heard of such kind of logic? Of course, there are multiple examples that we've had where the Chachamim are Choshesh for an Isser Karet and not Choshesh for an Isser Lav. Of course. But those are all cases where the Chachamim are creating an Isser. So therefore, where they found it necessary to create a Mishmeret for the Torah, I understand that they're more makbid on the Mishmeret of an Isser Karet than they are an Isser Lav. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Megala, that this requires greater concern, right? But here you're not talking about something that the Rabbanan created. Here you're talking about the fact that the Torah says she's not allowed to marry or she's not allowed to get Yibam. What's it your damn business? What, are you going to tell me, well, these mitzvahs are important mitzvahs, these mitzvahs are not important mitzvahs? That's outrageous. You have a job to worry about being over on an Isser Torah. You need to establish exactly the same way that there is no problem. You can't say, this isn't important enough to worry about. That's awful. So therefore, to say there's an afkamina here, this doesn't make any sense at all. Michti, are they both the arises? Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell you that he doesn't want you to be over on this thing? So what's it your business to try to figure out how much does he not want me? That would be terrible. So if that's the case, Mali Yisr Karet, Mali Yisr Lav, you have a chiyuv to avoid being over on an Yisr D'Oraisa. And in the same way that you can't go around saying, this is an important mitzvah, this is a less important mitzvah, like it says in the Mishnah, you have no idea. Therefore, the same thing is true of this Lav. Shouldn't make any nafkamina. Now, the question is, whether this is true according to everyone, or is this an idiosyncratic shita according to Rava? Because there are many, many examples where we actually see a nafkamina, even in terms of mishmeret, about the issue of the Rabbanim being careful. So there's all types of machlokesin about how far we would apply Rava's dictum. I mean, there's a shita that holds that you would only say this with a lav that does have an Isser Malkus attached to it. But if it's a general lav, we wouldn't say it. There is a difference between an Isser Karet and a lav. And the question is, do we say Mali Isser Karet, Mali Isser Aseh, Legabe an Isser Aseh? There also, the question is, are there differences? There's a machlokas. So this is lav dafka, that it's obvious. But the Maisa, most are maskim to Rashi's havchana between something that has been created by the Rabbanan, something that's being responded to by the Rabbanan on a D'oraisa. Anyway, says Rava, okay, fine. I'll explain to another reason why it is that Rebbe Meir relies on the chazaka in the Seifa, but doesn't worry about the chazaka in the Reisha. Now here, we get into a profound interrelationship of the functions of the chazaka and the dinim of the rov that we just brought up. In the first case, the Reisha, over there, a Yavam did exist. He left with the Tzara without a child. And the question is, did she, the other woman, have a child while she was overseas with my husband? And that is the question. So over there, when she left, okay, what was her status as defined by the Chazaka? She left in a presumptive state of Yibum. In other words, her marriage was a marriage that upon the death of the husband would require Yibum. On the other hand, the Rov, which talks about most women, the Tzara, would have had a baby. That rove goes against the chazaka. And it says she does not have a problem with Yibum. She should be able to marry whoever she wishes if her husband dies. There we have a situation where the rove contradicts the chazaka. So the chazaka that says that she can get Yibum is not more powerful than the rove, and it's not as powerful. Lo adiv ki ruva. Therefore, Rebbe Meir says, look, you still can't allow her because aite mi'uta de mapilot. Here's the problem. According to Rebbe Meir, there is still a mi'ut that is significant. We have to worry about that, right? So if you take a look at that mi'ut, which doesn't disappear, I'll leave it to Rebbe Meir, the mi'ut is still significant. So then if you put that mi'ut together with the chazaka, so the mi'ut is telling me there was no child, she needs to be mityabemet. And the chazaka is telling me there never was a child, and she needs mityabemet. So then, according to Rebbe Meir, if you put those two together, that becomes the equivalent of palga upalga. Because since I hold that a miut is significant, you can utilize that miut together with the chazaka, put them together, and that insists on our taking into consideration both possibilities, and therefore I am stuck. Lotina say velotit yabem. You see, if you are able to go according to Roth, and you hold like the Rabbanan that you can effectively, therefore, ignore the miut, and the mi'ut does not need to have any basis at all in your deliberations about the halacha, then I understand why you get married. But in this case, we have a palga palga because of Libet Rebbe Meir, we cannot ignore the mi'ut. And therefore, we are stuck. And according to Rebbe Meir, Lotina says she can't get married, that's for sure, but she also can't be mityabemet because of the fact that there may be a child that was born. But in the Seifa, now let's analyze what happens in the Seifa. In the Seifa, we had a chazaka that there was no brother-in-law, there was no Yavam at the time that her husband departed. So what's her chazaka? Her chazaka is this woman, upon termination of her marriage, can marry whoever the heck she wants, right? So her chazaka is Lashuk. Okay, and what does the Rove tell us? The Rove tells us that there was no change in that and there is no Yavam. Because even if the mother-in-law had a child, it wasn't a Yavam, according to the Rove. So now we have a Rove that is supporting the Chazaka. That's the issue. So both the Chazaka is Lashuk and the Rove is Lashuk. Now that creates the equivalent. Now here's the sophisticated point. That creates the equivalent, according to Rebbe Meir, of a mi'uta di mi'uta. And we already said that Rebbe Meir is not chayish for a mi'uta di mi'uta. Because now that we first have to establish what the set is, I'll be the chazaka, the problem of that mi'ut is that within that chazaka, it's the equivalent of being a mi'ut of a mi'ut, you see? And therefore, even Rebbe Meir isn't worried about it because the Zechor become miyuta be miyuta. And as we've already spoken about, Rebbe Meir doesn't worry about a miyuta le miyuta. That's why the Mishnah says in the Seifa, don't worry about a thingo wingo. You can go ahead and marry whomever you wish without worrying about whether your mother-in-law produced a viable yava. Fine. Now, we spoke about afterwards, what about the case where they went together and the other woman who went together with her husband, she finds out from elsewhere. That's that case before, I should say afterwards, that case that we had that said, Lotina say, Velotit Yabem, and we worked out why that would be true. I still don't understand. What does it mean? What do you mean? Please mute. What does that mean? She can never... She can never get married. Keep it up, Barnea. Try an infinity sign. That makes it much more interesting. Not just back and forth. Come on, man. We're talking about Le'olam Vayed here.
Yes, constant drinking.
Ula Olam But so never, ever. That's crazy. What do you mean? Why can't she simply get chalitza? And if she gets chalitza, then everything is over, right? She can go ahead and marry whomever she wishes. So why are we telling her? No, there's nothing she can do. Omar Zairi, of course, it doesn't mean forever. It just means until she can do chalitza. How long does it take to do chalitza? Well, Zairi says, look, we know that there's halacha that any woman has to wait 3 months before knowing if she's pregnant. And we made that as a takana, even if she's an islandist. We said before, we have a standing halacha, a woman who is moving from one relationship to another relationship, whatever it is, death, yiba, whatever the case is, has to wait 3 months because we have a standing requirement to, not about yiba necessarily, we need to know who daddy is. And therefore, since we'll always be misupak within 3 months, if she might have been pregnant from her earlier relationship, so therefore we wait 3 months. So for her to know, I don't care. She said, but my husband's been away for a year. Now he just died. How could I be pregnant? That's not the issue. 3 months after the death of your husband. Okay, so she waits for 3 months before she can get chalitza. I understand. That's vis-a-vis herself, okay? For her other woman, she has to wait 9 months because she doesn't know. So after 9 months, she can say, okay, listen, if she was pregnant, she already had the baby. So the baby, remember we said before that a baby is only matir the Zika upon birth, not upon pregnancy. We learned that out from the pasuk, Abuchor Asher Teled, right? So the baby we'd have to wait 9 months for. Okay, so the 9 months is actually over now. So once you wait 9 months, now Memanavshach. If you don't wait 9 months, then you have the problem of whether chalitza is going to be kosher during pregnancy, even if the pregnancy term terminates with a miscarriage. And therefore, don't do the chalitza now, because then you're up the creek. It may not be a chalitza kashera. Okay, but if you wait 9 months, b'manavshach, if she had a baby, then there's no problem. And if she didn't have a baby, you're getting chalitza, proper chalitza, because she's not pregnant. So, choletzet b'manavshach after the nine-month period. Rabbi Hanina, however, remember, it's true that for her own need for chalitza, she needs to wait only 3 months to ascertain whether she's pregnant. But she will always be unable to marry because of her other woman. Why is that? What? That's crazy. V'tachlotz b'manavshach. Why can't she get married? Get chalitza because either there was a baby or there wasn't a baby. I mean, how can there be forever not knowing? Abaye bar Ravin, Reb Chanina bar Ravin both said, because in the event that she finds out later that there was a baby, then it turns out that the chalitza was ridiculous. We didn't need chalitza. This was a husband who died with a child, right? And then we will need to announce that she is muteret for Kohen. So then nimtza tamatzricha kruz lakuna. Remember, we had this issue before. So you'll have to take out an ad in the New York Times. That's expensive. Okay, so it's expensive. So velitzricha, take out an ad. What's the difference? Because, as we saw before, there's always people who focus on the first article but never see the second article. So basically, the man is always guilty, even though the court found him innocent. They only heard about the guilty part in the New York Times. The same thing is true over here. We're going to hear that she got chalitza. We didn't read the ad that her chalitza was unnecessary. And now, when people years later see her married to a Kohen, oh, I guess chalitza does not ask you for a Kohen. So, therefore, we cannot do that. What? That's crazy. What about the Mishnah that we just had? A woman comes, she said, I had a child overseas, which Lechora would answer her for Yiba. And then she said, but first my child died, and then my husband died, which is Apeshi Sha'asar, who Apeshi Tir, she is believed. If she says, my husband died and then my son died, she's not believed, but we're worried. And we don't let her do yivam. How can we allow her to do chalitza? How? What if somebody comes along one day and says, no, she was telling the truth. She didn't need any chalitza. Definitely, we saw that her husband died while the child was still alive. What'd you make her do chalitza for? Are you crazy? Now she's in love with this kohen. She finally has her kohen. And you're going to say, well, no, can't be mater. You're going to have to be mater with the New York Times. But what if people don't read the New York Times? And you said we could never do that. Amr of Papa, that case was talking about where the woman was anyway a divorcee from another guy before she got married to this guy. So she has no issues with Kohanim because she will never marry a Kohen anyway. So what do I care if she gets Chalitza? I mean, meaning that obviously the Mishnah is not getting into the issues of whether we need advertisements in the New York Times. So take a case where it's irrelevant, okay? So she's a grusha. You've got problems with the New York Times. Okay, so then you're the one that works it out, okay? Go to the New York Post. Amar of Papa, we're talking about Ovira Grusha, who is anyway a surah to the Kohen. Ribchia, Bereder of Huna Omar. You don't have to say that that's the case. There may be a case where the very testimony of the woman is what tells us that there's nothing to worry about. Namely, that when she returned, she says, here was what happened. I and he and my child were all together in this cave. And then they died. So I'm the only one who knows which one died first and which one died second. So we don't have to be chayshish that there was somebody else there. And therefore, there's no problem of needing the New York Times because nobody's ever going to come and say otherwise. Fine. So that's the case. But the point is that we have to strip the other issue away from the determination of the halacha over here. And now it is time for Sir Richard. So in this case, we have Shtei Yevamot. Now here's where we get into the fascinating interrelationship of the part of the testimony that is believed vis-a-vis herself and the part that is not believed vis-a-vis the other woman. And we come up with a crazy situation. Here's the situation. Both wives come back from Medinat Hayam. There were two brothers. They were Yevamot. Both of them come back. Each one of them says, my husband died. So each one of them can get married, right? Wrong. Because we don't know whether the other brother died. What? What do you mean you don't know the other brother died? You just said that they can both get married. So how do you not know if the other brother died? Each one says, Meit Bali, Nemenet. Zo Omeret Meit Bali should be Nemenet. And yet, they cannot marry to the Shuk because each one of them has a Yavam. Who's the Yavam? This other woman's husband. But she said he's dead. Yeah, but we don't believe her that he's dead as far as you're concerned. We only believe her that he's dead as far as she's concerned. So here is the combination of the situation that we had before between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. Here's how it would actually impinge on the case where the two of them need to be Ne'emanot for themselves. Each one is Asura because of the continued liveness of the dead husband of the other woman. So each one of them has a Yavam. Now, if one of them has witnesses that her husband died, here's what happens. The one who has witnesses cannot get married. But the one who doesn't have witnesses can get married. Why? Because the one who has witnesses, we know that her husband died without relying on her own testimony for the sister-in-law. She's not believed to say anything for her sister-in-law, right? So, but we don't need her to say anything. But the one who does have witnesses, she can't get married because the other one didn't have witnesses. And therefore, the sister-in-law is the only basis that we have for saying that her Yavam is dead. But she can't trust her sister-in-law. So therefore, she who has the witnesses cannot get married. So the one who has witnesses, a sheyesh lo edim, is asura. The one who doesn't have witnesses is the one who's muteret. Now, imagine the case where one of them has children and the other one who does have children. So obviously the one who has children is allowed to get married because her husband is dead. But the one who doesn't have children cannot get married because we do not know that her yovam is dead other than on the basis of the woman who we don't trust for her, namely her sister-in-law, her yovama. Now it gets more complicated. Suppose there were other surviving brothers. So forget about the two husbands who went overseas, where over there we would need to rely on the respective sister-in-laws to allow them to get Yibam, right? Over here we know that there were living Yivamim, and each one goes ahead and gets Yibam by another brother. So now they all went ahead and got Yibam. Now the two other brothers die. So now what happens? Can they go and get married? Well, we still have the original question. Might there be a brother to this brother that died? And therefore, since the only way I know that the original brother is dead is through my sister-in-law's testimony, I don't know. I can't get married because I may still have a yavam that is supposed to take over from this brother. So what am I going to do? I can't get married. We've got the same situation, right? So you go back to the way it was before, and you're usher to get married. Rebbe Elazar says, no. Weird cheetah, listen to this. Says Rebbe Elazar, well, since they already got Yibam from that first situation, now we can, what? We can rely all of a sudden on the testimony of the sister-in-law to say that the original Yavam is dead? What does one have to do with the other? And yet that's what Rabbi Elazar is mysteriously saying. Rabbi Elazar Omer, look, once we were matir them to the other brothers who were back here, now after those brothers die for some weird reason, hutru l'chol adam, now they become mutarot for everybody. Okay, so first of all, let's take a look at the interrelationship between two of these cases, because it's curious. And this the Braita brings up. Suppose one of these sister-in-laws has witnesses and also has children. The other one does not have witnesses and does not have children. Cute. In this case, both of them can marry, right? Because one of them we know has children, so obviously there's no problem with the Yibam. But the other one who has no witnesses is faced with no Yavam because the other one did have witnesses. And so we can rely on the witnesses to get rid of the Yavam, not on the sister-in-law. So if you put together both cases, you end up with both of them being mutter, even though she has no children and no Eden. Very cute. Now what's left, of course, is the curious case of Rabbi Elazar, who, as Agatha Christie has written about, happened in the most mysterious way on the Orient Express, and nobody could figure out what in the world. Boy, Rava, what is Rabbi Elazar thinking? Is it because he just disagrees with the whole idea of a Yavama not being allowed? And he would agree that a tzara is able to be me'id. For here we're talking about tzara, we don't mean a tzara, obviously we mean the tzara in the yibam, in other words, her sister-in-law. That a sister-in-law is believed in general? So in other words, he was arguing all along? Is that possible? Or maybe it's because in this case, since each one of these women acted out and went and took the surviving brother that was left in town for Yibam, we do not believe that she would have gone ahead, committed not only adultery, knowing that her husband was really alive, but also being over on taking her Yevama, an Isser of Eshet Ach, a total disaster, two Isurei Kores in the Torah, and the Misa, and she went ahead to do that just in order to mess up the other one. Ah, come on, man. So since over here she acted out on her testimony, maybe that's the point, and therefore, Mishum Dehilom Mikalkala Nafsha, she would never go ahead and bring down the house on her head with saying, Tomus Nafshi impleached him, just to destroy the other one, where over here she, Agav, went and showed us with her actions that 100% her husband was dead. Now we're going to see tomorrow that in order to solve this mystery, we have to take a look at the differences and see if we can bring proof from other cases that would then give more weight to one approach than the other approach. And furthermore, we need to discover tomorrow why it would be that if you hold Rabbi Elazar argues on the primary idea that we do not trust Sarot for one another, why did he wait until now to venture an opinion? All of this exciting next episode. Stay tuned, hopefully, with the God's good grace. Tomorrow, same time, same station, Bezrat Hashem, for the next exciting episode of Rebbe Elazar on the Orient Express. Meanwhile, have a wonderful day. I shall miss you.